Chapter 31. Patriarchal dimension of Mr. Casby again revived in Clennam's memory the smoldering embers of curiosity and interest which Mrs. Flintwinch had fanned on the night of his arrival. Flora Casby had been the beloved of his boyhood, and Flora was the daughter and only child of wooden-headed old Christopher, so he was still occasionally spoken of by some irreverent spirits who had had dealings with him, and in whom familiarity had bred its proverbial result perhaps, who was reputed to be rich in weekly tenants, and to get a good quantity of blood out of the stones of several unpromising courts and alleys. After some days of inquiry and research, Arthur Clennam became convinced that the case of the father of the Marshalsea was indeed a hopeless one, and sorrowfully resigned the idea of helping him to freedom again. He had no hopeful inquiry to make at present, concerning little Dorrit either, but he argued with himself that it might, for anything he knew, it might be serviceable to the poor child if he renewed this acquaintance. It is hardly necessary to add that beyond all doubt he would have presented himself at Mr. Casby's door if there had been no little Dorrit in existence, for we all know how we all deceive ourselves, that is to say, how people in general, our profounder selves excepted, deceive themselves as to motives of action. With a comfortable impression upon him, and quite an honest one in its way, that he was still patronizing little Dorrit in doing what had no reference to her, he found himself one afternoon at the corner of Mr. Casby's street. Mr. Casby lived in a street in the Gray's Inn Road, which had set off from that thoroughfare with the intention of running at one heat down into the valley, and up again to the top of Pentonville Hill, but which had run itself out of breath in 20 yards, and had stood still ever since. There is no such place in that part now, but it remained there for many years, looking with a bulked countenance at the wilderness patched with unfruitful gardens and pimpled with eruptive summer houses, that it had meant to run over in no time. The house, apostrophe thought Clennam, as he crossed to the door, is as little changed as my mother's, and looks almost as gloomy. But the likeness ends outside. I know its staid repose within. The smell of its jars of old rose leaves and lavender seems to come upon me even here. Apostrophe, when his knock at the bright brass knocker of obsolete shape brought a woman servant to the door, those faded scents in truth saluted him like wintry breath that had a faint remembrance in it of the bygone spring. He stepped into the sober, silent, airtight house one might have fancied it to have been stifled by mutes, in the eastern manner, and the door, closing again, seemed to shut out sound and motion. The furniture was formal, grave, and Quaker-like, but well kept, and had as prepossessing an aspect as anything, from a human creature to a wooden stool, that is meant for much use, and is preserved for little, can ever wear. There was a grave clock, ticking somewhere up the staircase, and there was a songless bird in the same direction, pecking at his cage, as if he were ticking too. The parlor fire ticked in the grate. There was only one person on the parlor hearth, and the loud watch in his pocket ticked audibly. The servant maid had ticked the two words Mr. Clennam so softly that she had not been heard, and he consequently stood within the door she had closed, unnoticed. The figure of a man advanced in life, whose smooth gray eyebrows seemed to move to the ticking as the firelight flickered on them, sat in an armchair, with his list shoes on the rug, and his thumbs slowly revolving over one another. This was old Christopher Casby, recognizable at a glance as unchanged in 20 years, and upward as his own solid furniture, as little touched by the influence of the varying seasons as the old rose leaves and old lavender in his porcelain jars. Perhaps there never was a man in this troublesome world so troublesome for the imagination to picture as a boy, and yet he had changed very little in his progress through life. Confronting him, in the room in which he sat, was a boy's portrait, which anybody seeing him would have identified as Master Christopher Casby, aged 10. Though disguised with a haymaking rake, for which he had, at any time, as much taste or use as for a diving bell, and sitting on one of his own legs, upon a bank of violets, moved to precocious contemplation by the spire of a village church. There was the same smooth face and forehead, the same calm blue eye, the same placid air. The shining bald head, which looked so very large, because it shone so much, and the long gray hair at its sides and back, like floss silk or spun glass, which looked so very benevolent, because it was never cut, were not, of course, to be seen in the boy as in the old man. Nevertheless, in the seraphic creature with the haymaking rake, were clearly to be discerned the rudiments of the patriarch with the list shoes. Patriarch was the name which many people delighted to give him. Various old ladies in the neighborhood spoke of him as the last of the patriarchs. So gray, so slow, so quiet, so impassionate, so very bumpy in the head, patriarch was the word for him. He had been accosted in the streets, and respectfully solicited to become a patriarch for painters and for sculptors, with so much importunity, in sooth, that it would appear to be beyond the fine arts, to remember the points of a patriarch, or to invent one. Philanthropists of both sexes had asked who he was, and on being informed old Christopher Casby, formerly town agent to Lord Decimus Tite Barnacle, apostrophe had cried in a rapture of disappointment, "Oh! Why, with that head, is he not a benefactor to his species? Oh! Why, with that head, is he not a father to the orphan, and a friend to the friendless?" Apostrophe apostrophe with that head, however, he remained old Christopher Casby, proclaimed by common report rich in house property, and with that head, he now sat in his silent parlor. Indeed it would be the height of unreason to expect him to be sitting there without that head. Arthur Clennam moved to attract his attention, and the gray eyebrows turned towards him. "I beg your pardon, apostrophe," said Clennam, "I fear you did not hear me announced?" "Apostrophe apostrophe, no, sir, I did not." "Did you wish to see me, sir?" "Apostrophe, I wish to pay my respects." Apostrophe, Mr. Casby seemed a feather's weight disappointed by the last words, having perhaps prepared himself for the visitor's wishing to pay something else. "Have I the pleasure, sir," apostrophe he proceeded, "take a chair, if you please, have I the pleasure of knowing?" "Ah, truly, yes, I think I have. I believe I am not mistaken in supposing that I am acquainted with those features. I think I address a gentleman, of whose return to this country I was informed by Mr. Flintwinch." "Apostrophe apostrophe, that is your present visitor." "Apostrophe, really? Mr. Clennam?" "Apostrophe, no other, Mr. Casby." "Apostrophe, Mr. Clennam, I am glad to see you. How have you been since we met?" Apostrophe apostrophe, without thinking it worth while to explain that in the course of some quarter of a century he had experienced occasional slight fluctuations in his health and spirits, Clennam answered generally that he had never been better, or something equally to the purpose, and shook hands with the possessor of that head as it shed its patriarchal light upon him. "We are older, Mr. Clennam," apostrophe said Christopher Casby. "We are not younger," apostrophe said Clennam. After this wise remark he felt that he was scarcely shining with brilliance eye, and became aware that he was nervous. "And your respected father," apostrophe said Mr. Casby, "is no more. I was grieved to hear it, Mr. Clennam, I was grieved." Apostrophe, Arthur replied in the usual way, that he felt infinitely obliged to him. "There was a time," apostrophe said Mr. Casby, "when your parents and myself were not on friendly terms. There was a little family misunderstanding among us. Your respected mother was rather jealous of her son, maybe. When I say her son, I mean your worthy self, your worthy self." Apostrophe, his smooth face had a bloom upon it like ripe wall fruit. What with his blooming face, and that head, and his blue eyes, he seemed to be delivering sentiments of rare wisdom and virtue. In like manner, his physiognomical expression seemed to teem with benignity. Nobody could have said where the wisdom was, or where the virtue was, or where the benignity was, but they all seemed to be somewhere about him. Those times, however, apostrophe pursued Mr. Casby, are past and gone, past and gone. I do myself the pleasure of making a visit to your respected mother occasionally, and of admiring the fortitude and strength of mind with which she bears her trials. Apostrophe when he made one of these little repetitions, sitting with his hands crossed before him, he did it with his head on one side, and a gentle smile, as if he had something in his thoughts too sweetly profound to be put into words. As if he denied himself the pleasure of uttering it, lest he should soar too high, and his meekness therefore preferred to be unmeaning. I have heard that you were kind enough on one of those occasions, apostrophe said Arthur, catching at the opportunity as it drifted past him, to mention Little Dorrit to my mother. Apostrophe, Little Dorrit? That's the seamstress who was mentioned to me by a small tenant of mine?
Yes, yes.
Dorrit? That's the name.
Ah, yes, yes.
You call her Little Dorrit? Apostrophe, no road in that direction. Nothing came of the cross-cut. It led no further. My daughter Flora, apostrophe said Mr. Casby, as you may have heard probably, Mr. Clennam, was married and established in life, several years ago. She had the misfortune to lose her husband when she had been married a few months. She resides with me again. She will be glad to see you, if you will permit me to let her know that you are here. Apostrophe, by all means, apostrophe returned Clennam. I should have preferred the request, if your kindness had not anticipated me. Apostrophe, upon this Mr. Casby rose up in his list shoes, and with a slow heavy step, he was of an elephantine build, made for the door. He had a long white skirted bottle green coat on, and a bottle green pair of trousers, and a bottle green waistcoat. The patriarchs were not dressed in bottle green broadcloth, and yet his clothes looked patriarchal. He had scarcely left the room, and allowed the ticking to become audible again, when a quick hand turned a latchkey in the house door, opened it, and shut it. Immediately afterwards, a quick and eager short dark man came into the room with so much way upon him that he was within a foot of Clennam before he could stop. Halloa! Apostrophe apostrophe he said. Clennam saw no reason why he should not say halloa. Apostrophe apostrophe too. What's the matter? Apostrophe apostrophe said the short dark man. I have not heard that anything is the matter, apostrophe returned Clennam. Where's Mr. Casby? Apostrophe apostrophe asked the short dark man, looking about. He will be here directly, if you want him. Apostrophe, apostrophe I want him? Apostrophe apostrophe said the short dark man. Don't you? Apostrophe this elicited a word or two of explanation from Clennam, during the delivery of which the short dark man held his breath and looked at him. He was dressed in black and rusty iron gray, had jet black beads of eyes, a scrubby little black chin, wiry black hair striking out from his head in prongs, like forks or hairpins, and a complexion that was very dingy by nature, or very dirty by art, or a compound of nature and art. He had dirty hands and dirty broken nails, and looked as if he had been in the coals. He was in a perspiration, and snorted and sniffed and puffed and blew, like a little laboring steam engine. Oh! Apostrophe apostrophe said he, when Arthur told him how he came to be there. Very well. That's right. If he should ask for Panks, will you be so good as to say that Panks has come in? Apostrophe apostrophe and so, with a snort and a puff, he worked out by another door. Now, in the old days at home, certain audacious doubts respecting the last of the patriarchs, which were afloat in the air, had, by some forgotten means, come in contact with Arthur's sensorium. He was aware of motes and specks of suspicion in the atmosphere of that time, seen through which medium, Christopher Casby was a mere ensign post, without any in an invitation, to rest and be thankful, when there was no place to put up at, and nothing whatever to be thankful for. He knew that some of these specs even represented Christopher as capable of harboring designs in that head, apostrophe and as being a crafty imposter. Other motes there were which showed him as a heavy, selfish, drifting booby, who, having stumbled, in the course of his unwieldy jostlings against other men, on the discovery, that to get through life with ease and credit, he had but to hold his tongue, keep the bald part of his head well polished, and leave his hair alone, had just cunning enough, to seize the idea and stick to it. It was said, that his being town agent to Lord Decimus Tite Barnacle was referable, not to his having the least business capacity, but to his looking so supremely benignant, that nobody could suppose the property screwed or jobbed under such a man. Also, that for similar reasons he now got more money out of his own wretched lettings, unquestioned, than anybody with a less knobby, and less shining crown could possibly have done. In a word, it was represented, Clennam called to mind, alone in the ticking parlor, that many people select their models, much as the painters, just now mentioned, select theirs, and that, whereas in the Royal Academy some evil old ruffian of a dog-stealer will annually be found embodying all the cardinal virtues, on account of his eyelashes, or his chin, or his legs, thereby planting thorns of confusion in the breasts of the more observant students of nature. So, in the great social exhibition, accessories are often accepted in lieu of the internal character. Calling these things to mind, and ranging Mr. Panks in a row with them, Arthur Clennam leaned this day to the opinion, without quite deciding on it, that the last of the patriarchs was the drifting booby aforesaid, with the one idea of keeping the bald part of his head highly polished. And that, much as an unwieldy ship in the Thames River may sometimes be seen heavily driving with the tide, broadside on, stern first, in its own way and in the way of everything else, though making a great show of navigation, when all of a sudden, a little coaly steam tug will bear down upon it, take it in tow, and bustle off with it. Similarly the cumbrous patriarch had been taken in tow by the snorting Panks, and was now following in the wake of that dingy little craft. The return of Mr. Casby with his daughter Flora put an end to these meditations. Clennam's eyes no sooner fell upon the subject of his old passion than it shivered, and broke to pieces. Most men will be found sufficiently true to themselves to be true to an old idea. It is no proof of an inconstant mind, but exactly the opposite, when the idea will not bear close comparison with the reality, and the contrast is a fatal shock to it. Such was Clennam's case. In his youth he had ardently loved this woman, and had heaped upon her all the locked-up wealth of his affection and imagination. That wealth had been, in his desert home, like Robinson Crusoe's money, exchangeable with no one, lying idle in Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.